Good evening. And welcome to our latest installation or installment of our creation science class. We have been discussing quite a number of things the last couple of weeks. Of course, we watched the last several, I think it's 3 or 4 weeks, we've watched a series of videos just kind of helping to put some visuals to some of the things that we've been learning. And so tonight we're going to talk about or begin the discussion on dinosaurs and man. And one of the great things about this is that there's actually a tremendous amount of information, a tremendous amount of evidence out there to support the fact that dinosaurs and man actually did exist together at the same time, in the same place. I'm not sure I put all those other qualifiers in there. So, you know, the question can often be asked, well, why do we care? Why do we want to talk about this? Why is it so important to at least be made aware of some of this information? Well, you know, we have a lot of things as Christians we have to deal with, a lot of discussions that we have to have with people about the Bible and the Word of, and that it is the Word of God and so on and so forth. So why spend our time on this one? Well, really, the answer is pretty simple, and that's because dinosaurs are fascinating. They really are. You know, you think about it from just about, you know, every person, man, woman, child, they find the prospect of a 3-story tall, 100-ton reptile lumbering around pretty intriguing. You know, whether it's a Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, stalking its prey and making a mess of things, or if it's a maybe a Triceratops, maybe riding it into battle or something, or whatever. I mean, the thing is that everybody's fascinated by these things. My wife pointed out to me that just over here in north of Roundup, in the Little Snowies, they found what they believed to be one of the largest skeletons of, was it an Apatosaurus, is that what it was?
It's a
sauropod. Okay. Of a sauropod, walks on all fours, dinosaur, but vertebra were 3 feet long, just one vertebra. That's how thick it was. And huge. And it's fascinating. I would love to have the opportunity to go up there and just look at it, you know, use a little brush and unbrush. I mean, that'd be cool, right? So there's, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for this, and you know, the thing is that, oops, one of the things that, you know, there's an, unfortunately, the interest that kids show in dinosaurs, kids specifically, has been used for decades to destroy their faith in a literal 6-day creation, and therefore destroy their faith in the Bible. Of course, dinosaurs supposedly died out how long ago? Anybody remember that number? 65 million years ago, supposedly dinosaurs died out. And this misinformation, of course, not only leads to their wondering about whether or not the creation story is true, but also, of course, then begins to erode the foundations of the Scripture. So, of course, children aren't the only ones with these questions. As we grow up, as we become, you know, more intelligent and more well-informed, of course, we just accept what science says instead of asking the question of, is there an agenda behind some of the things that are going on or some of the things that are being taught? You know, as adults, many of whom will claim to be Christians, say that they don't necessarily, well, let me put it this way, I guess, people who believe themselves to be Christians will often accept, without really looking into it, the scientific, and I'm using that term loosely, worldview of that 65 million years since their extinction and, of course, in the old age of the earth. So the question that I get, believe it or not, or some of the things that the question I get is, well, dinosaurs didn't really exist. They're just made up. They're just fake. All those fossils we find, they're just a big conspiracy theory, and they're really not that big. And I'm sorry, that's a bunch of nonsense. They did exist. Dinosaurs are not, you know, some alien conspiracy or anything. They did actually exist. And so that's a big mistake if we think that dinosaurs didn't exist or that they were, you know, planted there or some nonsense like this. It is really pretty silly. It's a flimsy argument, and really it's downright ignorance and stupidity in a lot of ways. So let's talk a little bit about one of the arguments that we always find about dinosaurs in the Scripture is, let me ask you a question, what book and chapter is the word dinosaur used in the Scripture? It's not used anywhere. That was a trick question. What book and chapter in the Bible is the word dinosaur used?
Wrong word.
Yeah. I was a setup. I know you guys are going to answer that, so I was a setup. They said Job, which is actually where this is described. But the word dinosaur didn't really come about until 1842. So why would we expect the word dinosaur to be found in a book that was written at least a couple years before 1842? I mean, you know. No, apparently not. So when we think about this, you know, there's a lot of different things that, you know, a lot of different critters that we can consider to be dinosaurs. And so really, when we think that the word isn't mentioned in the scripture, it makes sense. Because that word wasn't mentioned or wasn't invented until 1842. So it really is inconceivable to imagine that a modern word would find its way into an ancient text. Secondly, there are numerous organisms that are never mentioned in the scriptures, yet exist. You notice cats are never mentioned in the scripture. Like, you know, your domestic house cat? You know why that is, right? Because cats are evil. They are of the devil. Just kidding. I have three cats. That's why I know that. But at any rate, there's other things. You know, aardvarks, bacteria, cats, all kinds of things that aren't mentioned in the scripture that we know them to exist. Yet, just like the things that are mentioned in the Bible, they do exist and they are created by God. You know, furthermore, there are descriptions in the scripture that describes creatures that fit the description of what we would call dinosaurs today. So the book of Job, as was correctly mentioned over here, describes a creature, a couple of different ones, actually, like two different ones, creatures that are called Behemoth and Leviathan. So if somebody has their Bible, I know we don't normally bring into this class because we're talking creation science stuff. If somebody has their Bible, turn to Job chapter 40. And then if somebody else has one, well, you know what? For the sake of time, because they're actually fairly long pieces of scripture, I'll just give you the references, and then you can read them on your own. It's Job chapter 40, verses 15 through 24, and Job 41, pretty much the whole chapter. Now, if you get an opportunity to read those, what you're going to see is that they are both very clearly describing what we would consider dinosaurs. You know, there's been some conjecture that they were hippopotamus or a large crocodile or alligator or whatever, but the descriptions just don't match. So when you get an opportunity, read through that, and you'll see that they're both very clearly dinosaurs. One of the things about this that you'll find, too, is that if you kind of read and then you look at what and you kind of envision a picture in your head, you're probably going to think of an apatosaurus and a plesiosaur. Or some other sort of water-dwelling dinosaur for the second one, for the Leviathan. The point is that the descriptions of these critters are nothing like what we see today. I mean, thankfully. The ocean's scary enough without plesiosaurs. So, but the reality is that these things that are being described, it was being described by somebody who had actually seen them. So, quite simply, dinosaurs did exist. And yes, they were that big, they were probably that vicious, but in a lot of cases they were also very small. We have several examples of what we consider modern dinosaurs. I mean, pretty much every reptile you see, you can call a modern dinosaur. Because remember, dinosaurs weren't only the things that were the 150-foot-long, 1,000-ton monstrosities. They're also the small ones, very small fossils as well. So crocodiles are actually commonly called living dinosaurs because the fossils that we find that are supposedly 65 million years old, their body structure has changed not at all. They're just bigger then. They're just smaller now. Okay, and there's actually a reason for that as well. We'll talk about that in probably our next section. So the next question then is because dinosaurs did exist, the question is really when? Well, evolutionists advocate that they evolved from some now extinct reptile 200 million years ago, and after that evolution, they became extinct somewhere between 65 and 70 million years ago. Often this time frame is estimated based upon the layers of rock that they find the fossils in. And we'll talk about this again, but you know how they date the layer of rock? By the fossils they find in the layer. But they date the layer by the fossils. Doesn't make any sense. But so the point of this is that there are some pretty different opinions here. Man, again, according to the evolutionary mindset, came into existence in one form or another about 2 to 3 million years ago. Interestingly enough, last week when we watched that video on finding Adam, you remember how far back they said they figured it was? It was a lot less than 2 million years. They said it was about 40,000 years ago. Still a huge number, but the nearest ancestor they could track back was not as far back as they thought. So, at any rate, evolutionary mindset says it's been 2 to 3 million years. Of course, this would mean that man and dinosaur have been separated by about 65 million years, or you know, give or take a few hundred or a few thousand millennia. Pretty big difference, of course. So, the question then, of course, becomes, where's the evidence to support either one of these? Now, I'm not going to go through all the evidence on the side of the evolutionary mindset. If you went to school, you probably got all of that. If you went to college, you certainly got it. If you studied any of this and you look it up in mainstream, you're going to get it. But so I'm going to cover the other side of this coin, of course. This scenario, of course, is the most widely accepted. And it's interesting to think about, but when we present evidence that flies in the face of this model, what does that do for the argument, not only against specifically dinosaur extinction, but really the whole age of the Earth? Because the extinction of dinosaurs is, according to evolutionary science, a hallmark, if you will, in all of the Earth, in the Earth's history. So, if we can present some evidence that suggests the opposite, that man and dinosaur were not separated by 65 million years, that they were in fact contemporaries, well, how would this assume, or how would this affect the assumed timeline of events? Well, as we work through some of this, we'll answer that question. So let's talk a little bit about some of the evidence, first of all. As we've seen before, mainstream science, in one form or another, whether it's print media or television media or whatever, has always held the belief, or at least in our lives anyway, has always held the belief and made bold statements concerning the age of the Earth, evolution, creation, the separation between man and dinosaurs, etc. You can see here from National Geographic in 1993, they said no human being has ever seen a live dinosaur. And they're not just saying that are human beings alive today. They're talking about human beings that have ever existed. Okay? So, obviously, the evidence, however, as we look through some of this, reveals an entirely different story. So let's get into some of this evidence. The Doheny expedition in the 1800s was led by a guy named Dr. Samuel Hubbard, of the California Museum of Natural History. It was in the Havasupai Canyon in Arizona. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Somebody knows. You guys close? You guys are Texas. Come on, you should know these things. So, anyway, in a canyon in Arizona is where this particular expedition was. And on the walls of the canyon were drawings of an elephant, an ibex, a dinosaur, and other animals. So, concerning the drawings, Dr. Hubbard says this: the fact that some prehistoric man made a pictograph of a dinosaur on the walls of this canyon upsets completely all of our theories regarding the antiquity of man. The fact that the animal was upright and balanced on its tail would seem to indicate that the prehistoric artist must have seen it alive. Okay? So, pretty interesting to note that this depiction of the dinosaur shows him standing, basically leaning on his tail. Now, if you were to show this to somebody in, say, a large southern continent of Australia, what would they say that was? Oh, that's obviously a kangaroo. But wait a minute, That's in Arizona. And that this, of course, is an artist's depiction of a critter that would look much like that. But I don't know of any critters that have ever lived in North America that look like that. At least not that I've ever seen. Interesting example. So let's look at another one. I forgot to put the quote up there. There's a quote for it if you want to read it again. And we're done. So another one we want to talk about are the Ica burial stones. And these are pretty interesting. These are from the area of Ica, Peru. Peru's in South America. Dr. Javier Cabrera came into possession of his first burial stone from the Ica section of the country of Peru. He was given one as a paperweight for his birthday. So you can see Peru is along the shore here, and that I tried to put a little pin there, but that's basically the Ica area of Peru. Okay? So he was given this as a paperweight on his birthday. So ironically, he could also recall his own father possessing the same, or very similar, rather oddly carved stone that his family found in their fields in the 1930s. The rocks have been identified as ancient burial stones that the Inca Indians placed when burying their dead. So these burial stones have been identified through archaeological means and comparing them to art and so on and so forth. And since receiving his first stone, this particular gentleman had amassed a collection of nearly 1,100 of them. There's a lot of them out there. And a third of them depict dinosaurs of some type. Okay? Triceratops, stegosaurs, etc., and various what we're called pterosaurs. Those are winged dinosaurs. So what's remarkable about many of these stones is not only their amazing detail, but the fact that they show dinosaurs interacting with human beings. This type of art and the area of their location have dated to the time of the Inca culture of AD 500 to 1500. Now, that's actually not that long ago, comparatively speaking. If you're looking at a 65 million year gap, that's just a blink of an eye. Now, this particular culture in South America lasted for about 1,000 years. And they can date these relatively accurately. So the question is, how could these ancient Indians have known the anatomy of these creatures if they had never witnessed them firsthand? Now, you notice that they're not looking at bones. It's not just a skeleton. There's a rather unfortunate fellow here in the middle. Looks like he's got a knife there. And, you know, good luck. And he's got one on his back and one's eating his leg. So now, keep in mind what these were used for. Burial stones. Does anybody have an idea how this guy died? I mean, he probably didn't die of old age. Okay? So, how did they know what they looked like? Yeah, choked on a chicken bone. Here's another one. I think this is pretty cool. I like this one. The guy's got an axe in his hand there. He's riding a triceratops. Now, remember, at the latest, these were etched around 1500 A.D. So how do they know what they look like if they didn't see them? Because I'm pretty sure, as advanced as the Incan culture was, they weren't paleontologists. They weren't spending their time trying to dig up dinosaur bones, put them back together, try to figure out what they looked like, and then carve themselves into rocks on the dinosaurs. Probably not. The detail on the stones that several Diplodocus-like dinosaurs the detail in these stones is such that several Diplodocus-like dinosaurs on the stones have what appear to be dermal frills, something never previously reported by scientists until 1992. These dermal frills were discovered to exist during an examination of fossilized remains of sauropods. In an article entitled "New Look for Sauropod Dinosaurs," paleontologists figured it out. Here's the thing. Remember, very old. Here's the dinosaur, the Diplodocus-like dinosaur that I'm talking about, has these dermal frills. Okay? And sometimes conical, sometimes more triangle-shaped. But modern science didn't know that those existed until 1992. So again, how did they know that a critter like this existed that had dermal frills along its back? I think I had this on there. Here you go. Stephen, whatever his last name is, you could probably pronounce that. Sure, whatever she said. Cherkis, is that his name? Cherkis, okay. See, I'll take her word for it, because I was not going to say that. Anyway, so he said, recent discoveries of fossilized sauropod diplodocid skin impressions reveals a significantly different appearance for those dinosaurs. The fossilized skin demonstrates that a median row, median meaning middle of the back, of dermal spines was present. Some are quite narrow, and others are broader and more conical. So, again, 1992, and thank you, Incas. Again, I'm not really sure. I've always kind of wondered, is this like a... He's got that axe. I'm not sure if it's like whaling or something, or if they caught it and they were going to, you know, butcher it. But, you know, this guy's got an axe in his hand, and it looks like this guy up here probably does. I don't know. Anyway, maybe it's a fetching stick. You're a very kind and gentle man, Mike. Yeah. So, here's another thing, though. Yeah. The stones also depicted the skin of many of the carved dinosaurs to have patterns resembling bumpy, what they call bumpy rosettes. Now, this detail was used for a long time to be proof that they were inaccurate, that they didn't know what they looked like, that they hadn't seen them, because there was an amazing amount of detail in their carvings, and therefore were not scientifically accurate, because, of course, science wasn't aware of them, so anything they're not aware of is therefore false. Okay. However, further discoveries of fossilized dinosaur skin and embryos have silenced the critics. In numerous reports, bumpy rosettes like the ones depicted on the burial stones have been identified and discussed. In fact, one of the studies came from the same continent where the stones originated. I think I have a picture of that one here. I don't. I'm going to go back. I want to show you the one that they're talking about here. Oh, right there. So specifically, that kind of a pattern is what they're talking about. That, well, why would that be there? They don't have any patterns like that. Well, when they found fossilized skin and embryos, guess what? That kind of marking was present. So, again, a bit of detail there that it would be pretty tough to guess unless you'd seen it. Okay. All right, so a couple of other folks here. Louis Chiappi and his colleagues discussed sauropod dinosaur embryos and noted the general skin pattern consists of round, non-overlapping, tubercle-like scales. A rosette pattern of scales is present in a particular specimen. And they noticed that this is rather comparable to what they've seen before. Now, again, the question becomes, if they didn't exist together, if the Incas had not seen them, how could they have drawn such an accurate picture of a dinosaur if they didn't exist, if they didn't coexist? Pretty difficult to do. Okay, so let's move on, talk a little bit more about some other petroglyphs here. The Natural Bridges National Monument petroglyph, it is in the monument itself is located in extreme southeastern Utah. If you've ever been there, you'll see that there's sandstone rock that's been carved away by the White River and other mechanisms of erosion, probably during the flood as well. There are three natural bridges in the area, one of which has a petroglyph depicting a dinosaur. The petroglyph is extremely weathered, and when compared to other drawings in the immediate vicinity, there's no question that the drawings were made at the same time. And I'll give you a larger version of this in just a second. Although the exact dating of the drawing is unknown, they are certainly made before modern times, well before dinosaur fossils were discovered and recorded. So you can see how weathered these are, but a couple of things here. You can kind of see the depiction of a man here. I'm not standing anybody's way. Right there. And then you can see down here, here's your sauropod dinosaur. It's got a little smiley face on him, too. Okay. So, That's either a really strange looking dog, which there are plenty of strange looking dogs. It looks like a dinosaur to me. Looks. Yeah, you're missing the rest of him. But yeah, that's kind of funny. With a smiley face, doesn't look like E.T. E.T. got lost with time travel. At any rate, these were certainly made before modern times, long before dinosaur fossils were ever discovered and recorded. This is again in Utah. How about Montrose County, Colorado? Hey, look at that. Creation science. It's awesome. Why did I skip that slide? I don't know why I skipped that slide. Well, anyway, the Montrose County in Montrose County, Colorado, petroglyphs attributed to the Fremont Indians, they were contemporaries with the Anasazi, are found in Montrose County, Colorado, and appear to depict the Triceratops, including the characteristic three horns and neck frill. And I don't know where the slide went, honestly, but I was working on this earlier today. It was there, but I have a picture of it, and I'll show you later, I guess. I don't know where it went. All right. But again, another depiction of a dinosaur. This is one of my favorite ones. There's an ancient Cambodian temple. It's in the jungles of Cambodia. They were produced, these particular temples were produced by the Khmer civilization. It began as early as the early 8th century and extended through the 14th century AD. One of, if not the greatest monarchs and monument builders of the entire empire was Javarman the 7th, and he was crowned the supreme king in 1181. These temples were rediscovered by Portuguese missionaries not that long ago, actually, and in the 16th century. And many of these were restored in the 19th and 20th centuries. The Prom, which is what you're seeing here, is one of the most picturesque, and it was left in its natural state. Basically, as they found it, they cleared out some of the brush and made it relatively safe, and people, many, many people go to it every day. I actually know several people that have been there. I've never been there myself. I would love to, but this particular one was rediscovered in the 16th century, and it's left in its natural state. It gained international attention in 2001 as the setting for the first Lara Croft movie. I guess it was based on a video game. Never played it, but anyway. This or the movie? The temple is in Cambodia, yes. Okay. Not just a clever name. No. So, just show you some pictures here. At the corner, formed by one of the front entrances, so right at the corner, one of the front entrances, kind of have an arrow pointing there in that. It's harder to see here, but there's a column right there. Kind of see the edge of that line? That's an edge of a column. Okay. So at the corner of this particular column here is a 10-foot, it's 10-foot column. It's covered by decorative circles. So get a little bit closer picture. So there it is again. You kind of see all the little circles in there. See a little bit closer there. Okay, and as you get a little closer, you'll notice that one of those carvings doesn't belong. So, must be that sand just formed like that, and they just decided to carve the rest of them around it. Now, one of the animals enclosed in the circle is obviously a stegosaurus. Taprom abounds with these, with stone statues and reliefs like this. Almost every square inch of this gray sandstone is covered with ornate carvings. I was telling Anne about this last week when I was in New Zealand in 2009. I was having a discussion with an intellectual from the, and a self-described intellectual from, I'm not just giving him that title. Yep, a self-described intellectual from the University of Otago who had come to our free pizza night. Anyway. We had an interesting conversation. It was a whole bunch of people had come down, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, I got to have a discussion on this particular subject, and I find it very interesting. And so I kind of set him up. I was having a discussion about this particular Cambodian temple, and I was showing him all these carvings, which I'll show you in just a moment, and we'll have this whole discussion, remembers, based on dinosaurs and man coexisting. And when I was showing him all these other pictures, and I got to this one, I said, "What is this?" His response was, "It is an amorphous blob." Yep. This is a self-described intellectual. Said, "That is an amorphous blob." And I said, "I'm not sure where you got that, but I could ask any five-year-old boy in any civilized country and ask him what that is, and at the very least, he's going to tell me it's a dinosaur." So the reality is that this, he knew what that meant. He knew what it meant to have a temple that was carved a long, long time ago, or that was built a long, long time ago, with these carvings in it, in the wrong place at the wrong time. He knew what it meant. It meant that his particular perspective on the timeline of really everything was wrong. So, a couple of other things, when they wanted to, they could depict other animals. See a monkey, see an antelope or a deer of some sort. You see, a little harder to see here, but a couple of parrots there. So they were very skilled artisans. It wasn't like they just accidentally happened to carve something that looked kind of like a dinosaur because they were sloppy artists. There are more. Yeah, this is the most easy. This is the clearest one. At least they're not. Yeah, the others are more amorphous and less dinosaur-like. This is again, a little difficult to see. It looks great here, but there is a lizard here. I'll outline them for you. So it's not like you couldn't tell what they were. I mean, it's not like this was some accident that they kind of sort of drew something that looked like a stegosaurus. It is a stegosaurus. Okay. Yeah. So a couple of other things, just working on some more dinosaur art. This is from ancient tombs in Peru. This is a large dinosaur tapestry. These textiles depict living dinosaurs, as do their ceremonial burial stones and pottery, including that these awesome creatures were still alive at the time and ancient Peruvians saw them. So a couple of close-ups here. A little harder to see in the dark one, but on the lighter one, again, remember that the dinosaur we saw with the conical shapes along its back kind of looks like what we just looked at. Again, same place from the Ico burial stones. Another one here is pottery. So, again, same kind of thing. Look at the dermal frills there. The Peruvians knew what they looked like. This pottery is on display at the Rafael Laredo Herrera Museum in Lima, Peru. Let's go to another part of the world. Let's go to Australia. Dennis Fields, who was former missionary to far north Queensland, the Kuku Yalanji people, he told the Answers in Genesis folks in Australia about 20 years ago of a story that the elders of the tribe told him of a creature that they called Yaru or Yarba, depending upon where they were. The tribe inhabits the rainforest regions where there are a number of water holes in which, in earlier days, Yaru was said to live. There's a story of how the Yaru devoured a young maiden. The missionary asked one of the tribe's artists to paint the story for him. The tribal artist, with very little formal education, had no knowledge of what so-called prehistoric animals looked like and was drawing only from the descriptions handed down in the ancient stories. His impression of this looks an awful lot like what we would call a dinosaur. Remember, this guy was not educated in public education. He wasn't educated formally. The only education he had was handed down, and especially something like this, through oral tradition. So when he was asked to draw this, and here's the interesting thing. Now, I didn't catch this at first until I started kind of thinking through this and really looking at it. Yeah, okay, let's look at the outline. Kind of looks like a plesiosaur, long neck, obviously something about the teeth there. I mean, it's got some pretty sharp teeth apparently. And then, of course, flippers, or But what is all this? That's its digestive tract. So not only did they see it, but they killed it and cut it open and knew what it looked like. And he depicted it well enough in the drawing. Now, you could say that, well, this guy was just drawing based upon what he thought it looked like. That's entirely possible. But an uneducated person who had never really heard of ancient or, you know, extinct dinosaurs like this, to draw something like that, it's pretty remarkable. Yeah, that's true. Get scale with all the folks. You know, I'm not sure what the kids are doing there. It's probably not a good idea. Or maybe he's dead by this point. I don't know. But, you know, draw some other turtles there and some fish. That's a large snake, it looks like. But, yeah, you get the idea that that thing's pretty large. Good point, Mike. So, this has a remarkable resemblance to what we would call a plesiosaur or plesiosaurus. So, another one that I don't have pictures of, because no pictures that I know of exist, are Makole Mbembe. And this is a story that's told often in Cameroon and in Congo and Gabon. Now, basically the story behind this particular one is that there are sightings of a large animal with a long neck, long tail, rounded-shaped tracks with three claws. And this is happening now. This is something that they have not been able to photograph yet, but they see that there's plenty of photographs of the tracks in the ground. And the locals, people who spend their lives there, obviously, who live in the area, it was interesting. There's a, I don't remember where we saw it. It was on a part of a documentary, but a team of scientists went to this particular area. I believe it was in the Congo. And they were showing them pictures or drawings of all these different organisms, all these different animals, and a lot of animals they'd never seen, like, for instance, a grizzly bear. Oh, hey, that's pretty cool. I'd never seen that before, and they're telling them about what it is and kind of describing it to them in a way that they would understand it. And as they're going through all of these, you know, they show them hippos and, of course, seen those, and they're giving them the names. So they flip open to a hippo, and what is this called? And they tell you whatever that word is in Congolese. And as they go through them, they get to bears and, like I said, stuff that they'd never seen, and skunks. I thought that was their reaction was kind of interesting. And then when they got to essentially a plesiosaur or a dinosaur, they're like, oh, Makole Mbembe. They pointed right to it and said exactly what it was. These folks had seen something that looked like a dinosaur that of some sort. Now, whether or not it was a plesiosaur, we don't know. But the point is that this is something that happens, is continuing to go on. If I encourage you to look into it. It's kind of interesting. Now, I don't have any good photos of it, so I didn't share any with you, but its shape does suggest a sauropod, the tail and the tracks and so on and so forth. Locals, as I mentioned, have claimed to have seen the animal, and when they're asked to draw it, they clearly illustrate a sauropod dinosaur, or in the other one that I was telling you about, they picked it out. So it's pretty interesting. And there are a lot of places in the world that are still primarily wild. So, at any rate, pretty interesting stuff. One of the things that they describe it as, too, is ranges in size from hippopotamus to an elephant size, which they know what a hippopotamus is, and they know what an elephant is, and they're not going to mistake either one of them for a dinosaur, a sauropod. Okay? So, just to give you an example, this is one of the things that I'm not sure if this is the exact one, but this is how the documentary was describing it. They were basically saying, okay, this is what they were showing them pictures, and when they got to dinosaurs that looked something like this, that's what they were drawing, and that's what they were describing. And, you know, obviously, if you look in this portion of it, you know, the legs and the torso, you can see that, you know, being an elephant or possibly a hippopotamus, but the long tail and the long neck big difference between an elephant and a sauropod. So, all right, so let's move on to the next section, talk about the dinosaurs of Acambro, Mexico. This is rather interesting as well. This is relatively recent. From 1944, a guy by the name of Waldemar Julesrud The only reason I know that guy's name is because somebody else pronounced it for me. He was a German merchant. He had left, basically, Germany. He wasn't happy with what was going on in World War II. Moved to Acambro, Mexico. He discovered some rather unusual artifacts when he was riding his horse around the lower slope of El Toro Mountain. So there's Waldemar, and there's El Toro. So this is El Toro Mountain. He was just riding his horse along the base there in the area that he was settling, and he found some rather interesting artifacts. Acambro, Mexico, just for your placement, is approximately 175 miles southeast of Guadalajara and approximately 115 north west of Mexico City. So Acambro, Mexico is right there in that square. There's Guadalajara. There's Mexico City. So it's kind of right in between the two of them. Okay? Just give you an idea where that's at. From his elevated vantage point on El Toro, Mr. Yulsrud spotted some partially exposed hewn stones of a ceramic nature and a ceramic object half buried in the dirt. He climbed off his horse, he dug the stones away, and a few ceramic pieces, of course, that were broken, he dug them out of the ground, and being somewhat archaeologically astute, he was able to determine that and realize that these artifacts were unlike anything that he had ever seen. The objects he held in his hand seemed distinctively different than those from other known Indian artifacts and cultures. He eventually worked out a deal with a local farmer to excavate all of these precious pieces. Eventually, over 33,500 figurines and artifacts of ceramic and stone, including some in jade, were uncovered. A key feature of this discovery was the fact that many of the artifacts were highly detailed dinosaur figurines. So, Acambro, Mexico. Just a couple of quick examples. All these were dug out of the ground at El Toro. The scientific community has attempted in many ways to dismiss the Acambro figurines as a hoax that was perpetrated by Yulsrud for the purpose of gaining some notoriety so that he could charge admission and all this other stuff and basically get his name in the history books. But here's the thing. Another guy, the name of Charles Hapgood. I think Mrs. Love, when I did this class the first time, it wasn't Mrs. Love, one of our older folks, knew who this guy was. So I thought it was interesting. But he's a professor of history and anthropology at Keene State College in New Hampshire. He became interested in the figurines and decided to investigate firsthand. Okay? So he was intrigued by the findings, but he was pretty skeptical about what he had heard. He made his first visit to Acambro in 1955, and initially, Hapgood was a self-confessed while open-minded skeptic. He expected to find nothing more than an elaborately created hoax. Instead, what he found would make him a believer and captivate him for the next 18 years. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm looking to expose a hoax, if I'm not successful in 18 years, I don't think I'm going to expose it as a hoax. I don't remember. It was a long time. That's a good question. I don't remember. But that was your good point, and that's a good question. I don't remember. But he spent 18 years studying these artifacts in Acambro, Mexico. So, a couple of things about it here. Hapgood, of course, he eventually wrote a book based on his research. It was originally published in 1972 and has since been re-released by Adventures Unlimited Press. I have not looked it up recently if it's available on Amazon or not, but when I put this together, initially it was. Today, today's version of the book is titled Mystery in Acambro, Did Dinosaurs Survive Until Recently? Last time I checked, it was widely available. It was about $15 plus shipping, unless you have Amazon Prime and there's no shipping. And here, it's interesting to note the description of the book that is found on Amazon. So there's the cover. Here, this is funny. Well, I don't know if it's funny. It's interesting to me. Here's the description of the book on Amazon. It says, the Akombro collection comprises hundreds of clay figurines that are apparently thousands of years old. However, they depict such bizarre animals and scenes that most archaeologists dismiss them as an elaborate hoax. The collection shows humans interacting with dinosaurs and various other monsters, such as horned men. But Hapgood and Gardner were convinced that the figurines from Akombro were authentic artifacts, which indicated that men and dinosaurs had cohabited together in the recent past, and that dinosaurs had not become extinct many millions of years ago, as is commonly thought. David Hatcher Childress writes a lengthy introduction concerning Akombro, the latest testing, and other evidence of living dinosaurs. What's wrong with the description? Well, I thought a couple things pointed out at me. Let's look at this again. I'll put some emphasis in here for you. And various other monsters, such as horned men. Yeah, and that's correct. There are some guys with horns, but they could be wearing a hat. I don't know. But I thought it was rather interesting. They're doing everything they can to say, here's what the book is about, but here's all the things that we're going to say to try to discredit it. Okay? And he basically goes on to say, both Hapgood and Gardner were convinced, like they're, got lobsters crawling out their ears or something. So, at any rate, a couple of things to consider about these. Amazon, of course, Amazon.com is one of the most widely used search engines for books. It sells more books than any other place on the planet that I'm aware of. And they choose to include in the description of this book a line that would cause any somewhat skeptic or undecided person to probably disregard this important researcher's nonsense. That was kind of their point.
Yeah, that description is all the research.
Right, exactly. That was the point. Without saying this is fake, don't waste your money on it. Right. Yeah, hey, I can get it for you. It'll just take you 3 weeks to get it, just as you already know. So, what they failed to mention is the significant links to which the authors went to prove the authenticity of the findings, and as we shall discuss briefly. So, consider the following measures that were enacted to establish the authenticity of this particular collection. Teledyne's Isotope Laboratory performed some dating on the artifacts. They did some dating tests on the carbon deposited during the firing on the ceramic samples submitted by Hapgood, and it dates up to 4530 BC. And author M. Young, the inventor of the Bell helicopter, who had sponsored Hapgood's investigation along with Earl Stanley Gardner, author of the Perry Mason Mysteries. So if you ever read Perry Mason, he also helped to fund some of Hapgood's research. He submitted Uhlsrud's artifact samples, the Akombro figurines, to the University of Pennsylvania for dating. Radiocarbon dating performed by Dr. Frohlich Rainey in the laboratories of the university indicated that the culture may have developed between 6400 and 3500 years ago. Additional tests using thermoluminescence, that method of dating pottery, were performed. They produced dates of up to 4500 BP before present, or 2500 BC, which this, of course, upset professional archaeologists and set off within the scientific and museum world a controversy over the accuracy of the dating method. So when presented with information that flies in the face of their long-held beliefs, instead of trusting the research that they've trusted 1,000 times before, they then test the dating method. They don't trust the dating method anymore because it can't possibly be what it's showing. But they're all very old. That's the point, is that they weren't made within recent time. That was the point that they were getting at. And in this case, of course, especially with the thermoluminescence, oh, wow, geez, we've been using this to date everything else, and how wrong can we be? Well, they trusted it before. They didn't have a question or a problem with the dating method before until it disrupts their worldview. Okay, so instead of capitulating to the evidence, they test the dating method, or they question the accuracy of the dating method. So, they go back and retest it. And it was announced that because of anomalous factors in the clays, it was impossible to determine an accurate date. Yeah, interesting how that works. Test, test, and retest until you find an answer. And then when you don't, when you find the answer you don't want, just tell it, just say the test was wrong. Essentially what's happening. So, according to David Childress, who penned the foreword to Hapgood's book, the most recent thermoluminescence testing done on Acambro pottery fragments taken by Bill Coate and John H. Tierney during the filming of the video Jurassic Art in the early 1990s obtained results of 3,975 plus or minus 55 years before present. These results fall within the range of 6,400 to 3,500 before present time, as originally was suggested by earlier testing. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. When they established the dating method. Yep. Mm-hmm. Good. Well, not many people know that. Good job. So, again, note that the more recent testing's results fall in that range, as it was originally suggested. So, consider also the fact that teeth from an extinct Ice Age horse, the skeleton of a woolly mammoth, and a number of human skulls were also found at the same site as the ceramic artifacts. So all of these more recent things were found at these beside these ceramic artifacts. And Hapgood noted that he later took the teeth to Dr. George Gaylord Simpson, America's leading paleontologist at the Museum of Natural History. He identified them as the teeth of Equus canvas, whatever, an extinct horse of the Ice Age. So thus, the collection had evidence of extinct animals, human skulls, and dinosaur carvings from the same culture of people, but how could this be? In 1999, Dennis Swift made a trip to view the figurines. This was not that long ago. After receiving permission from the local authorities, he began to unwrap the ceramic figures. Dr. Swift noted that there was an absolutely astonishing amount of breathless magnitude as one object was unwrapped, and there before us was an iguanodon dinosaur figurine. Why so much astonishment over this particular figurine? Well, he continues on. In the 1940s and 50s, the iguanodon was completely unknown. No hoaxer could have known of iguanodon's existence, much less made a model, for it wasn't until 1978 or 79 that skeletons of adult iguanodons was found with nests and babies. So let me just kind of summarize this for you. Let's just say, for the sake of discussion, that both Waldemar Julesrud and George Hapgood faked this. That they took their knowledge and made 33,500 ceramic figurines, many of them being depictions of dinosaurs, and they faked it all. Except the iguanodon wasn't even known to history or to science until much later. There was no evidence of it until 78 or 79. So not only were they really good at faking it, but they were also time travelers. Okay? They might as well have been. So, that's right. So, information on the iguanodon discovery that Swift alluded to can be found in the Dinosaur Encyclopedia, Michael Benton, 1992. Okay? It should come as no surprise, considering what we have learned of the response to those that hold an evolutionary worldview, that despite evidence for their eyes, however, officials declared that because of the object's fantastic nature, they had to have been a hoax. Right. All the evidence points in the opposite direction, that they're authentic, and yet officials declared them to be a hoax because of their fantastic nature. I don't know. I don't know. Probably, I would imagine they probably did. Oh, yeah, I hope so. I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah. Yeah. Oh no, it wouldn't have been. That's why, because all they need is a few scientists to say, "Oh, that's just a hoax," and then the rest of the scientific community just takes it. Yep, and they just ignore it. So, this archaeological hoax presents insoluble problems for evolutionists. As Childress puts it, most respectable archaeologists will walk around the Akambaro mystery as if it were a landmine. The very existence of the figurines threatens the ivory tower of the current paradigm of history. This is quoted in his book, Hapgood's updated book from 2000. So, want to see some of these figurines? I'll have all kinds of pictures. This is rather interesting. I always start with this one because it's one of my favorites. This particular fella here, this is obviously a long-necked dinosaur of some sort. What the interesting thing about this particular long-necked dinosaur is that it was made to be standing using its tail and upright. How many of you have seen Jurassic Park? The original Jurassic Park. Okay? You remember that scene where they're driving through the park and the big old dinosaur stands up and he eats a tree? Remember? Yeah, he's the nice dinosaur. Right? And he stands up and he's... That was a huge discovery that was actually made by Dr. Jack Horner out of Bozeman, Montana, Museum of the Rockies. It wasn't discovered until 1993 that those dinosaurs could actually stand like that. So again, even if these guys had faked it, this was the ability for those large dinosaurs to stand like that was unknown until very, very recently. Just another depiction of what those dinosaurs may have looked like. So here's a couple other ones. We'll just kind of go through some of these. Here's that iguanodon statuette or figurine that we were talking about earlier. Some of these, as you look through them, yeah, a little funky. He's only got front legs. Yeah, this one's pretty accurate. Looks like an Allosaurus of some sort. Looks like one of the legs is missing. How about pterodactyls? Flying reptiles. They're not all that unusual. Actually, there's Josephus. How many have heard of Josephus? He was an ancient Roman historian. Actually, he was Jewish, but he was working for the Romans. And he wrote of some traditions that came out of Moses, the Exodus. And one of those things is that they were attacked by flying dinosaurs. They used to bring, was it an ibis? I think was the name of the bird that they would keep with them to help keep the flying reptiles away. So here's some other ones. It's a long-necked dinosaur. This guy's not having a good time. I'm not sure who's winning there, but I guess I put my money on that one. So here's another one. This is probably a dinosaur, and this is probably an idol of some sort. So often these critters would have been magnificent and probably would have been the source of a certain amount of worship and awe and reverence, and so it's not surprising to see them worked into some of their other religious artifacts, which we see that in other cultures. Stegosaurus, possibly, or some other diplodocoid. There's another Stegosaurus, another one. He really loves his Stegosaurus. Yeah. Well, they start out small, too. I mean, I have a couple dinosaurs in my house. I have a gecko and a turtle. I mean, they keep growing their entire lives. Here's some other ones. I'm hoping this is more of a play session. And not like the Ica burial stones. Again, more of them. I mean, some of the details in these are just amazing, and how well done they are. This looks like it could have been some sort of a water bearing critter, and a couple of guys riding on it. Yeah, and this guy lost his head, obviously. All right, so lots more that we can talk about in that regard, but I hope this, if nothing else, whets your appetite to look into it a little bit more. Again, I can give you the names of these books if you want to find them, but most of those pictures, actually all those pictures, as far as I know, are still on the web. If not, I've downloaded them and I have them. So there are many, many of these, and there's a video that was put out by Dr. Don Patton. I say it was about mid-90s. I'll tell you, Don Patton is one of the hardest guys to watch on television because he hated the camera. He couldn't look at the camera, and so he would never look at the camera. He'd always look away. And so he was talking, and he was never talking into the camera. Great information in it, but the video was horrible. And the book is really well, very well written, and actually tells about some of the fact that, as far as I know, And at least the last time I did this research, those dinosaur figurines are still in Acambro, Mexico. And you can see them, but it's not like it's a big museum. They really don't like foreigners coming and looking at them, simply because of the controversy that surrounds them. So, what we're going to talk about next week, obviously rolls very much into this. Talks about the fossil record. We're going to talk about that from the perspective of what, of how an important component of, or how important component, how important it is to this discussion. There you go, I'll just throw that word out. So, how important it really is to understanding the depth and breadth of this discussion. And probably after the fossil record, I have another video if you'd like to watch it. It's called Dinosaurs and, Dragons or Dinosaurs. It's actually pretty interesting because it goes into some of the cultural history about where dinosaur, where dragons came from. And nearly every culture has a legend of a dragon. And that's pretty interesting if you think about it. You ever think about the Chinese zodiac?
Yeah.
And why all the other critters on there are things you see running around, and then there's one that's not, supposedly? Pretty interesting in that regard. So at any rate, we'll probably finish, we'll do that one after we talk about the fossil record. All right. Thanks for your time, guys.